Passion, drive, and patience. The formula of winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything for you to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has it covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices that you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP it needs to be and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Again, ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Jew, which ironically is not live at all. That's okay.
This song fucks.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
How could fucking be a bad thing? Like, when they say go fuck yourself, like, I never understood how that was an insult.
I don't know. If
you think about it, right?
It means something differently if it comes from white people versus black people.
What?
I heard someone say this.
Go
where,
fuck yourself is
no,
is
no, no,
racial...
not that. But when you said this fucks, like you
oh,
used
this
it
fucks.
As
oh,
a,
okay.
Like as a verb.
Yes.
I wasn't sure how you meant it because I feel, I saw this Instagram, used to TikTok. I don't know what the fuck it was, but it was this black guy and he's like, white people slang is just black people slang in reverse. And he uses a few examples. He goes like, white people are like, it's good. Or she's good. And then the black guy was like, she's bad. And that means the same thing.
Right, right. Okay.
Or it's like white people are like, let's roll. And then black people are like, let's bounce. Like it was just opposites. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. An interesting observation. So when you said this fucks, I didn't know.
Was that
like,
one of his examples?
This fucking sucks.
Oh, no, no, no. This
you know.
Fucks is this fucks is always good, man.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure you didn't watch it, but one of the few shows that I have watched is Silicon Valley on HBO. And
yeah.
There was just a scene where it's just the nerdiest fucking guy that looks like he's a virgin. And, you know, some big swinging D walks in there and is like, this guy fucks, doesn't he? Yeah, this guy fucks. So, I mean, now so you look at somebody... where you would look at somebody like me who's like, you know, a misshapen, hairy, overweight, you know, Jew, and you'd be like, that guy fucks. So it's kind of just like
a play on that.
Yeah, sorry. It's
I, like
I guess
it.
It really wasn't that deep, but now it feels like it is.
I like taking things to a deeper level.
I know you do.
You know, God forbid. And I felt bad yesterday after leaving the show. I was like, all right, I need to like... chill out. I was feeling very chatty yesterday, and I would just like to apologize for that because I feel like a lot of the time.
Is that to me or the audience?
No, that's not really geared towards you. It's more towards the people listening.
Oh, okay.
Or that will listen in the future.
I was like, oh, okay, what is
yeah,
this apology?
Yeah, no, yesterday I realized, and listen, like I'm an opinionated person, but I also feel like, not that I don't have an ego, I think everyone has an ego, but to some degree. But I am more than happy and willing to admit when I'm wrong or I misspoke or I misstepped or whatever the case may be. And after yesterday's show, I pissed Bubba off. Oftentimes I feel like it's unwarranted, but yesterday I felt like it was very much warranted after kind of, I'm like, why am I fighting these stupid battles? But I was just feeling chatty because I feel like I have not been subdued or anything like that, but the nature of the conversation, much like when it revolves around politics, you kind of take a back seat. The talk has been a lot about, you know, say in the last week and a half or so, a lot of racing heavy, sports heavy, and I'm not expected to shut the fuck up, but it's like, much like you said, when you got five people in the room who know about politics, like, what do I have to add if I'm not really involved in that? That's exactly how I feel about sports.
Yeah,
it's like, what the fuck am I going to say that you, Lummy, Dan, and Rhett aren't going to fucking say, and Bubba aren't going to say? My questions will be dumb. The only questions I really ask are, you know, the...
We just need to have you put, like,
the rap sheet of whatever athlete you're talking about.
Yeah, we just need to have you, like, put up a sign in front of, like, your camera when they're talking sports. So that way people can't talk about, Anna's looking like this, Anna looks disinterested, all this other stuff. Because you're really just doing your job at that point. You're just letting the people who know what they're talking about take over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But,
no,
yeah.
I think people also, or what I think is an important element of doing good radio, is not just knowing when to chime in, but also knowing when to shut the fuck up. I think that's important because I don't want to just say words to say words.
Right. No, yeah.
You know, I let the people who know the sports talk about the sports. And again, if it's something that piques my interest or you keep talking about something and I don't know what that means or what it is, I have no problem asking a dumb question. I usually preface it with, this is probably a dumb question. But
you think I looked up fucking Tim Scott today? I don't know who the fuck you guys were talking about for vice president. But I'm like, all right, Tim Scott, that sounds like he's a name in there. I didn't look him up. I'm not interested at all. If it happens, it happens, you know? But
yeah,
I get what you're saying, because you do research sometimes
and
pop up.
But again, in order for an athlete to come onto my radar, they have to, you know, they have to kill somebody, drown a dog, punch a woman in an elevator. Now, all of a sudden, I'm very interested. Oh, you know, I was talking to, I think it was Will Koontz. I was talking to Will Koontz about
I'm glad you brought him up.
Will, about OJ. And I'm like, didn't he go to USC? He played for the Buffalo Bills. And even Will was like, how the fuck do you know that? I'm like, because the motherfucker killed two people. You know, now I'm paying attention.
Yes.
His daughter lives in St. Petersburg.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
You know, so once I can get that connection, now I'm tuned in to whoever that player or athlete is. Otherwise, I just couldn't give less of a fuck. But again, if they're drowning dogs or they're shooting people or they're involved in a gang or they punched a pregnant woman in the stomach, now I'm paying attention. That's fair.
May I ask you a question about something you just brought up?
Yeah.
Will?
Yeah.
Okay. It's okay if you don't want to answer any of these questions. Just say
fifth. Whatever. That's fine.
Okay.
Go ahead and ask.
All right. Do you know why Will left the Johnny B Show?
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Sure. Because Will himself has talked about it.
Oh, has he? Okay. So
he's talked about it. We've talked about it we do a podcast every Wednesday on his network, Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio. And he also went on a Cat Named Mo show. This was probably about 2 months ago, and had a quite in-depth conversation.
After he was already done with Johnny B?
Correct. Oh, you know, come on. You know a Cat Named Mo can't help himself.
Man, those guys.
To
yeah.
To be honest, I think Mo was pretty good. Like, he wasn't trying to drag Will to talk shit about Johnny like he
Well, I mean, I think
just do.
I think just showing up, I think, is, you know, giving
enough.
And giving an F you to Johnny B.
Of course, but again, like, you could take it down. Mo has often dragged me and other people where he gets you just in. He's like, you know, I heard they said this about that, and you go, well, that's not true, and then you start just letting it fly. He's very good shitster, I would say. Mo,
yes, anything to avoid show prep is he's very good at.
That's very true.
So
so what's your question?
Yeah, so I found out that Will was hosting Johnny B's show and stuff, because Johnny B was out. I guess, you know, he's doing, you know, some of his
comedy
stand up. Yeah, where he makes his money. So I totally get that.
Sure.
And I guess it got to a point where Will wanted his name on the show.
Yes. He wanted co-billing.
He wanted co-billing with Johnny B, Johnny B and Will show, whatever. And Johnny B said no.
Correct.
That's fucking wild. The ego to say no, just so you know. And I think it's also fucking wild to ask to have your name on the show.
Okay. Well, let's kind of lay out what their situation is. They're nighttime guys. I was a nighttime guy. I was on the show for 4 years. Nothing was really happening in terms of no one was getting promoted. No one was getting a better time slot. No one was getting paid more for both of them.
Right.
And Will was feeling very frustrated, very stuck. I think him and Johnny also had some personal grievances, which I won't get into.
Well, who doesn't when you're working together?
Yeah, sure. You know, kind of living on top of each other. And Will had asked John Brennan for more money. And I think it even got to the point where and I could be wrong. I could be remembering this wrong, but he may have gotten a raise, but then he got like his hours slashed in half.
That sounds about right.
Because they sold that time slot to the Lightning.
Yes.
So whenever there's a Lightning game, which, I mean, obviously, you know, hockey and I don't, but I think it's like 3/4 of the year they fucking play hockey.
Yeah, I mean, when they're in the playoffs.
6 months,
yeah,
eight months.
They've been playing. Yeah, it's about 6 months. They play a couple times a week, so.
Yeah, and so every time there was a game, which would happen to be between the hours of 8 and 10, I think that was their time slot.
Right.
But, yeah, 8
and 10. Yeah, 7. They would play at 7.
So, yeah, it would bleed into their show, so they just wouldn't do a show. So at some points in the season, again, I don't know how frequently they all play, but they would only do a show maybe twice a week. And then maybe Johnny would have comedy one night, and so Will was essentially hosting one night a week, and that was, you know, not every week. Every week was a little different, but
okay. For
the most part, they were averaging maybe 2 to 3 shows a week. So maybe you're getting paid more money, but you're working half the amount that you did
that
before.
Sucks.
Yeah, so it was very frustrating for Will and Johnny, and Will just felt like
he wanted something else.
He just wanted to feel like he was progressing, and that's fair. Like, he's been on the show for 5 years. When Ryan Adams got let go, they didn't replace him. When I got fired, they didn't replace me. So where it seemed like Calta was getting a new member every year and A Cat Named Mo Show was getting a new member every year. But, you know, Drew Show, Johnny B Show, every time someone would leave or get fired, they wouldn't replace them. So you would think, okay, well, there's more people. Maybe I can get a raise because I'm doing the work of 2 or 3 individuals because it's just me. That's, you know, what Will thought. Fair enough.
They love when somebody fucking quits. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
though.
I know. I know they
love it.
They don't replace them and they don't pay anybody anybody anymore money. So they win big. But yeah, Will was frustrated. And so he had tried to work the financial side of things and that was not working. That wasn't budging at all. Or if it was, like I said, he'd get a pay increase, but then he'd get his hours slashed. So it's like, what the fuck is the point? You're actually making less money now. And so he just felt like the only way that he could kind of progress or feel like he was progressing would be a title bump,
okay.
You know, status bump, if
okay.
you will. So he's like, listen, he again, according to him, and even according to Johnny, I've heard Johnny say this as well, that Will did the majority of the show prep. And
yeah, Johnny B is busy as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and Johnny B would give him credit for that as well.
Yeah.
So he said to Johnny, like, look, I want to be on the show, but I want co-billing. And I don't know how seriously Johnny took that request or, I mean, it was more than a recommendation, but, you know, whatever. It was a request from Will. And then I think around Thanksgiving, he gave Will gave Johnny an ultimatum saying, look, you got a week to figure this out. If it's yes, I'll stay on the show. If it's a no, I'm walking.
Oh, wow. That's tough.
And it was a no. So.
Man. And yeah. What's the reason? Do you know the reason for no?
Of course.
What is it? Is it ego?
Yeah, of course. I
oh,
mean,
okay.
of
All
course
right.
it's ego. I mean, what else would it be?
Well, I just wanted to. I mean, listen. I appreciate that you talked to me about it. I didn't know how. I didn't know it's been discussed openly already.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, it's been discussed openly. So I'm not sharing any secrets.
Yeah, no. But with my time in radio,
yeah.
I have not heard of anything like that. So I found it interesting. But really, when you get down to it, like, yes, I now that you explained it, I get why Will asked. But to me, if you appreciate what somebody's doing for you, to put their name on the show. It's nothing.
Well,
like it's nothing. Johnny B doesn't have to do anything. Like,
well, it would be a rebranding. He did have some merch and stuff like that, so that would have to go out the window. But I think for Johnny, this is Johnny's point of view, and I see both. So I'm really not playing sides here. I'm very good friends with both of them. I do Thanksgiving and sometimes Christmas with Johnny every year. Him and his beautiful wife Leah. They look great. Leah had bariatric surgery. She's lost like 100 pounds.
Oh,
she's
wow.
fucking insane.
Awesome.
She looks phenomenal. That's not why I love her, but I'm just, you know,
yes.
giving an update. So Johnny and I are very close. And then Will and I are just as close, if not closer, because we do a podcast. He's probably, you know, in my top 3 best friends right now.
Yeah.
In my life. I speak to him frequently. I'm very good friends with him and his girlfriend. I know his dad. I've met his mom. I've gone to Thanksgiving at his house. Like, we're close. We're very close. So from Johnny's point of view, he's going, look, I have this brand, the Johnny B Show, and you got your start in radio because of me. I brought you onto my show. The only reason why you have a platform is because of me. And yes, even though you're doing a lot for me now, the whole reason I brought you to the dance, motherfucker, the only reason why you have this platform or have been able to go as far as you have is because of me. That's how Johnny felt. Like, this was my show. This was always my show.
Okay.
And you got to think, like, Johnny doesn't have a lot either in terms of he's not getting a pay increase. He's not getting a promotion. He's not moving to a better time slot.
Right. His status is something that he has.
The only thing is, yeah, is the show name, is the brand. So from that point of view, I totally get it. And then from Will's point of view, he's like, look, I've put in 5 years. I'm doing the job of three people because, you know, the executive producer was fired. The other co-host was fired. So it's just him and Johnny, Will and Johnny. And Will's like, I've been putting in a lot of work. You've been taking a lot of time off because, fair enough, you have another job that pays much more money. Obviously, you're going to prioritize that. So I've been hosting. I've been prepping. I've been doing all this stuff. I want co-billing. Obviously, Johnny's name would be first, but and Will Coons or whatever, and the Will Show. And so I understand it from that perspective as well. So it was kind of interesting to see how it all shake out. And eventually, Johnny just said no.
Oh, and how did you feel like you were in the middle at all when it was going down?
No. I mean, because we're not all going to work together.
Right. But being so close with both of them, I mean, it's not like it's you know, Johnny B's asking you what Will said and Will's asking you what Johnny B said. I feel like with you, that would be at least tough to balance. Like,
I thought it might be awkward. You got to think, like, Johnny got married in December of 22. I was a bridesmaid and Will was a groomsman.
In 2022?
Yeah, December. Oh, okay. December 11th.
No shit.
2022, yeah. I went with Leah on her bachelorette party to Savannah, Georgia. I was a bridesmaid. Will was a groomsman. We were paired together. Like, it was a whole thing.
You guys did a whole cute little entrance thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a little dance, whatever, yeah, you know. My dress and his bow tie matched.
Oh, yeah.
It was a thing.
Yes.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, fuck, like the band's breaking up. But you know what? The band never stays together.
Never.
Someone dies in a plane crash or ODs or something like that. So it's kind of like, I hate to use this term, but separate but equal. You know, not to reference Jim Crow or whatever.
Yes.
But separate but equal. So it was funny. Right after the big blowout, it was right around Thanksgiving. Me and the boyfriend went to Johnny B's for fucking Thanksgiving. And then I saw Will like a few days later. And, you know, with Johnny, we didn't discuss anything. It was just happy to be there,
yeah.
You know, holiday shit. And then, you know, Will and I talked a little bit, but...
But you're doing a lot of Thanksgivings. That's what I'm fucking taking away from this whole thing. Who else are you seeing? Will, Johnny B, who else are you stopping by to see?
Well, we used to do it all together. The year before, Will would come to Johnny B's and bring the girlfriend. I'd be the boyfriend. Like, it was a whole thing. And Johnny's son would come with his girlfriend, so we were all hanging out. But yeah, I'm big on doing Thanksgiving. I did Thanksgiving at Tara Clem's house.
Did you?
Yeah. Not this last year, but the year prior.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of fucked up because Bubba got sick.
Was that when he had COVID? Oh, yeah.
Maybe the 18 times he had COVID. and I was actually there with like him and his stepdad.
Yes.
And that was like 6 weeks before he died.
Oh.
So like Bubba didn't even get that last Thanksgiving with him, but I did. I felt kind of guilty about that.
Oh, geez. All right. Yeah,
sorry. I didn't mean to make it dark. But
no, I mean,
that did cross my mind.
I feel like you're really just like putting it on his forehead, telling him, like, I had one last Thanksgiving with your dad and you didn't.
Yeah. And I got to eat with Uncle Bruce and Janie Cakes. And
was it entertaining?
Tarek. Oh, fuck yeah. And then the next day, we did Thanksgiving at Johnny B's house. We did back to back Thanksgivings.
Hey, listen,
I roll deep.
Yeah, anything probably for you to not have to fucking ever have to cook anything. So
yeah, I bring wine. I bring stuff.
Yeah, no, you're good.
I don't come in empty handed. I brought sangria, motherfucker. I make a mean sangria.
Oh, was that just where you just throw the fruit in the wine?
It's literally where you cut fruit and then just dump wine
that's
in.
That's what I thought.
But you got to mix it every few hours. So there's that element
okay.
to it. So don't take this away from me.
Well, no. Listen, I appreciate you. You asked me one time about something going on at the Bone, and I was like, I am not plugged into anything that happens over there.
Oh,
but
I am.
But I found, I found out about that, and I was like, I'd like to ask Ott about that. And then I go, oh, shit, is she not going to want to talk about that?
No. Again, so, I'm not saying anything that they haven't already publicly said.
That's just, like I said, just something interesting. I mean, if it was the point where I just appreciated somebody so much and I didn't think that I could do the show without them, I'd give them that, you know. But if it's somebody where it's like, hey, listen, I can do this with somebody else, or I'm still putting this thing together, I'm still building this brand, you know, all of a sudden to venture off and start building a new one, like, you know, I kind of get that stuff.
Well, what about this? Like, I think one of the talking points for Will was, I think Ian was on the show. Ian Beckles was on the show with Johnny B and Will one night. And they were talking about other shows on the bone, and Drew's show came up, Drew and John's show. And I think Johnny said something to the effect of like, yeah, it's crazy that they don't put John Senning's name on the show. It's just the two of them. And Will just like stared at him like, what the fuck? What the fuck? So, I mean, what about that? When you were with Drew, I know it wasn't just the two of you, but you were a major part of that. You were the second man in command.
Yeah. So,
did you ever feel like you wanted your name on the show, or you just don't give a shit about stuff like that?
I mean, would you believe me if I said I never thought about it? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you here. Let me whip you through my career real quick.
Sure.
So I started off interning for Fisher and Napoleon at 97X. So
Napoleon?
Yeah, Napoleon. R.I.P.
He was a little guy.
Yeah, he was
a midget.
No, just a shorter guy.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So he ended up getting fired, and they were bringing in people from all over the fucking country to interview and all. This is back when like radio was hiring people. They got a guy coming in from D.C., a guy coming in from New York. Like, mm-hmm. who wants this morning show job in Tampa, Florida? So they ended up not hiring anybody, and they hired me for some reason, probably because I was way cheaper than anybody else.
Of course.
So my name was Boy because I was Boy Intern. So they made the show Fisher and Boy. So I wasn't expecting to ever be. I mean, but again, I didn't feel like my name was really in the show because it was just fucking Boy.
Right.
So then Drew took over for Fisher at that point, and when Drew came on the show, that's when they called the show The Morning X with Drew and Seth. So okay. I felt like they officially put that in there. They were rebranding, so they decided. I mean, they could have called it The Morning X with Drew Garabo, but they wanted to put my name in it. They wanted to highlight me and Danielle more. When I went to,
Why didn't they put her name on there?
Just I think they thought everybody thinks three names is too much,
right? But so you were essentially higher up on the totem pole than she was, obviously.
Yeah,
otherwise
I was.
Would have been Drew and Danielle, right?
Wait, how would it have been Drew and Danielle?
Well, I'm saying you were higher up on the totem pole than she was.
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, she was my intern.
I see.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so then I went over to Hot 105, and it was Hot Mornings with Jade, and I don't even think I wanted my name on the show, but there was no conversation about that. It was just Hot Mornings with Jade Donovan, and
it was just you and Jade?
Yes. It was just me and Jade, and I mean, that's how it went, and there was never like with Seth Kushner or anything like that.
Sure.
So, and then when I went with Drew, his show went from In Your Face with Drew Garabo to
Drew Garabo Live.
Yeah, Drew Garabo Live. I think I was working with them when they did that, when they rebranded me. I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, to me, Drew is one of the few guys that can do a show by himself, and it's always been the Drew Garabo show, no matter where Drew was. When Drew was over here doing a show for Bubba, I think it was I don't know, the new Drew show or something, but it's always been Drew Garabo. So I mean, that's, to me, he's a massive, massive talent and very, very well known. So I, even coming from Orlando, I knew a lot of people knew him. So I never wanted to put it in there. To me, I'm all about like the content. And I always say, when you want to name bits, or you're like, we're trying to figure out a name to this benchmark or whatever, I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, just come up with some alliteration, because I just care about like what actually goes on the radio.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like, oh, I don't have an ego or anything, but as far as having my name in the show, it's not something that I ever pondered. If John Senning wanted his name in the show, I'm willing to bet that Drew would probably let it happen.
I think they may have discussed that, when all that shit was going down with Johnny and Will. But it's easy to say when they're not asking, I suppose. Of course I'd let you do it, but like giving you eyes, like don't even fucking try.
Yeah, no, I get it. There's the saxophonist is really starting to get a lot of play in Dave Matthews Band, so then he wants to be the Dave Matthews Band and, Zany. I mean, I don't I get it. You want to keep things the same. It's hard to fucking brand shit. So, I mean, if you're trying to, especially, when you're Johnny B's night show, when he's on barely because the Lightning are playing. So, like I said, I understand the situation. I am sure there's a lot of people that want their name in the show. I believe for a while, actually, Anna, I think over at Hot 101.5, I feel like it was the Miguel show.
It was, and then they got co-billing.
Yeah, it was the Miguel show, and Holly, I mean, they were definitely a 50-50 team, but
yeah.
She had never had her name in the show, and that was part of the thing, so they did the Miguel and Holly show.
Yeah, and it was really cool, because I remember actually them getting on the air, and Miguel was the one making the announcement, and he was really championing that decision. Like, he was the one that was like, this is awesome. We get to share the glory together, not just on the show, but in the title of the show.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing, is Will would never have asked that if he was paid more money. Like, he just wanted some... He just wanted to show that he had made some progress in the last 5 years.
Doesn't that? But can I tell you, as that's the state of radio. Isn't that fucking sad? That like you can't get anything in radio, so you just want a little recognition, just want a little something. Like that's, I hate that.
Yeah.
Not that he wanted that, Anna, but just like that's all it has to offer.
Yeah, it does suck, but it's one of those things like, all right, well, you kind of knew that, or you found that out. You either stay and deal with it or you leave. And he ended up, you know, kind of walking.
I'm
hoping that, you know, however long this job lasts, I hope it's as long as Bubba's career lasts. But, you know, I don't know what I would do if I wasn't doing radio. I have very few skills, so.
I mean, you don't spend too much time thinking about it, do you?
No, I feel like that's kind of wasted energy, you know, the trying to find out what plan B would be if I don't even really need to have a plan B, but it's good to think about, but not too good to obsess over. I mean, I'd figure it out. Here's the thing. I have enough confidence to know that I would figure it out. Like, I'd figure out a way to make some sort of life for myself, create income, and maintain my lifestyle. I know I could figure it out and probably exceed the lifestyle I have now, actually. But I don't know if you feel the same way. Well, actually, I know that you do. You said you worked a 9-to-5 job where you're making like pretty decent money, but it was soul sucking and you didn't want to do it anymore.
Well, I mean, it kind of, when you talk about you're not sure what you would do if this job went away, since you're all into all the heady stuff, it's a big reason why I left, you know, Drew's show and, you know, Cox after I'd been there for 19 years, because I actually wanted to see if I could make it out of radio. You know, I wanted to see if I could have the skill set, because I quit that job. And I didn't have anything else lined up. And there was a few things that I was talking to, and they all fucking fell apart. And, you know, Bubba was the one offer that didn't fall through. And I ended up, you know, getting back into radio. But I wanted to see if I could...
like, do podcasts. You wanted to do something with spoken word,
I wanted to do something, like, but I, you know, I wanted to separate myself from radio to see if I... because I had been in it since I was 19.
Yeah.
To see if I could, you know, still live, still make a living. And I kind of can, but it's not as enjoyable as this is. So, you know, this is why I kind of settled into this is something that I want to do. So that's a big reason why I actually wanted to see if I could live without it.
Yeah, I think people, and I'm not saying this is you, but I think a lot of people have this warped sense of, hey, when I find my passion, my calling, it's going to be amazing and I'm going to love it 100% of the time. It's like, that's not really realistic, because there's aspects of every job, even jobs that you love, there's going to be aspects of it that you don't like very much, whether it's, you know, paperwork or
that's
dealing with insurance companies, or maybe you have a boss that can, you know, rile you up sometimes. Whatever the case may be, you have to have a reasonable expectation that with every job and every person and every, you know, adventure that you go into, there's going to be aspects of it that aren't great. So if you like it 90% of the time, 80% of the time, fuck, even 60% of the time, I think that's a win, because most people hate it 100% of the time.
And I agree with you 1,000,000,000%. Yeah. And that is not something that, and I'll give him credit, because it was one of the few things that he said that stuck with me. But John Brennan told me when I was going through my shit, you know, towards the end, and, you know, John Brennan said, you know, you're not going to like every part of your job. He's like, there's part of my job that I don't like. He's like, I don't like, you know, having to tell somebody I can't give them a raise, or I have to fire somebody. And I was like, you know what? I always thought that there was a fucking perfect job.
No.
And then I realized there wasn't. And then you go, you have to settle for, you know, you're happier a higher percentage of the time than you're not. And again, like I said, that's something that seems so easy, but I didn't pick up on that till, you know, much later in my career.
Yeah. It became apparent, and which is fine, because here's the thing, like, I've been doing a lot of research into happiness recently. I know that sounds like a very Anna woo-woo thing to say, but it's true. Or it's like, okay, why am I not this happy? I thought I would be just ecstatic once I got this or that or this job or this relationship, and my life isn't what I thought it would be. And I've been trying to just do a deeper dive into, like, how do you really cultivate happiness? Because even something that I learned when I was in college instead of studying evolutionary psychology, you know, you're not really.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get when you're talking through Mint Mobile. I mean, I can't believe that I've been living some other life with all this scratchy mobile when I can get crystal clear and the best mobile through Mint Mobile. And I can do it all for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. I can afford this. How much have I been paying on my other plan? Probably getting gouged. But it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan. I mean, I'm talking jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Say goodbye to all that nonsense. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Bubba. That's mintmobile.com/BUBBA. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Bubba. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We evolve to be happy. It's not really part of the design. It's nice when it happens, but if you talk to anybody and you ask them what their goals are, or generally speaking, if they're, I don't want to say if they're not a super high achiever, but typically average people say, I just want to be happy. I just want to enjoy my life. When you have people who are super achievers, they're like very direct and specific with their goals. Like, I want to hit $100 million, or I want this Ferrari, I want this. But, and they think those things will bring them happiness, and they typically don't, or at least the happiness doesn't really last. Like, yeah, they hit the whatever, they made partner, or they made the X amount of dollars, or they bought the car, they bought the house. But it's like, after a while, that just becomes your fucking house. It's not your dream house, it's just your house. And it's not your dream car, it's just your fucking daily driver, whatever the case may be. So I've been trying to do a deeper dive into like what really cultivates happiness and how you can kind of make it more sustainable than just, I'm going to hit this goal, I'm going to lose this amount of weight, I'm going to make this amount of money. So
you're looking for like extended happiness, like for days and weeks kind of thing, and not just like moments of it?
No.
Or are you just trying to understand it more?
I'm trying to understand it so I can kind of manipulate my brain so that it's more prone to be happy than unhappy. Because I wouldn't say I'm unhappy. I think I've been learning a lot about my personality configuration, and I score extremely high on neuroticism. So the way that I experience, like,
where do you do this on BuzzFeed? Where do you find these out?
Remember, I sent you that podcast that you probably didn't listen to. No shade.
Yes.
But this guy, Dr. Arthur Brooks, he's out of Harvard. He's been doing this research for like almost 30 years about like how do you cultivate happiness, because he himself isn't really a happy person. So it's kind of like this me search sort of stuff.
Yes.
A lot of people do. And he started talking about stuff that really resonated with me, in the sense that he was talking about different, he's like, this isn't happiness, but mood balance. So there's people who experience like higher levels, or report higher levels intensity of happy like moments throughout the day, like happy mood, like good mood versus bad mood sort of feelings.
Right, right.
And the intensity of these positive and negative emotions. Well, I fall into the category of the quote mad scientist, where I feel extreme happiness. I would say little tiny things. I'm really good at savoring small things. Small things will make me incredibly happy. Just a cup of coffee, like Saturday morning, I'm sitting outside on my patio drinking coffee, and I'm just like, I'm like, this is fucking awesome. Like, I love this small tiny thing. Just, it's perfect.
It's peak life.
Yes, this is amazing. Or I know this sounds so fucking stupid, but when I untie my shoelaces at the after, like, I don't just like slip off my running shoes or my whatever my shoes I wear every day, and I have the laces untied so that the next morning I don't have to untie them. They're just ready to go. Like, just a little something like that. I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, just so I just slip it right on and tie the shoe.
There's
without...
always, so, there's at least one little thing per episode that you end up dropping where it just, I think, is what makes this podcast. So,
yeah.
Fucking pre-tying shoes.
Yeah, just yeah. Like the shoelaces are undone. They're ready. You just slip the shoe on and you just tie it really quick, and I'm out of the door in fucking 16 minutes. It's just awesome. It just makes me so happy. So I feel these extreme, like, levels of happiness throughout the, or not, I don't want to call it happiness, but let's just call it like positive mood affect. I feel great, but then I have equally negative emotions. So something will set me off and I go into a tailspin.
Yeah,
where
I gotcha.
I have a lot of just a lot of anxiety about it or negative thoughts or
irritable.
But also my OCD kicks in. So I have like literally obsessive compulsive thoughts that it's just like a loop. Boom, boom, boom. Same thought. I can't not. I mean, to the point where I've been in such a bad rut where I'll be eating and doing that, I can't taste the food. Like, my brain is just, it cannot stop. To the point where, I don't know if I mentioned this on this podcast or a different one, but, like, I'm trying to get cognitive behavioral therapy. Like, it's getting really bad.
Is that, what is that? Is that where you get the microdosing?
No, it's just kind of like you, I don't want to call it, like, your typical therapy where you're sitting on a couch crying to your therapist about whatever, but I feel like you explain your situation to your therapist. This is how I understand it anyways. I'm obviously not a psychologist.
Yeah, I want
to
see if I've heard of this or not.
But essentially, they give you the tools to try to, like, help yourself get out of that loop. So instead of just saying, you know, you're crying to your therapist's like, oh, your mom was mean to you. They go, okay, look, this is how you stop, or at least you disrupt the obsessive compulsive loop.
Like, the cycle, these are, break the cycle.
Yeah, this is how you break the cycle. Here are some tools that you can use. I think a big one is when I was in therapy for my OCD like 15 years ago, a big one that they told me was like, you are not your condition. Because in my mind, I was. Like, there was no separation between Anna and my OCD. It was just, like, part of my personality. So when they were explaining to me, like, no, you don't, this isn't your personality. I mean, maybe. That was a big part of why I was so apprehensive to take SSRIs and go to therapy. Because in my mind, I didn't know where my personality ended and my OCD began. I was like, fuck, if I go get therapy or start taking drugs, am I going to lose, like, my, quote, essence, my quirkiness, which I kind of like to some degree.
Yeah, I worried about that for a long time.
I think it's a common thought. So,
especially for a creative job. I mean, I always worried that if I started taking medicine that I was going to become a zombie.
Right.
And I wouldn't be quick on
the
radio.
You wouldn't be funny anymore.
Yeah,
you would lose your Sethiness,
But I know I was worried about that. But then you know what it did is it ended up making me better because it took out all the other...
Lowered the anxiety.
Well, it took out all the other shit. And then I only had to focus on, like, you know, being funny and, you know, being decent at my job. And, you know, that opened things up even more. So, yeah, it's a fucking... It's a fucking head game every day with everything.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about that anymore. I was initially because I was like 19, 20 years old. I didn't really know. No one in my family had done therapy before or taken, as my father called them, mood-altering drugs. My parents were not very initially supportive of me taking these mood-altering drugs. But then they later came around, and I think maybe even, you know, my dad dabbled in them a little bit when he was going through his divorce. So anyways, par for the course. The quote volume on my OCD has turned up quite a bit, and it's made me feel very much like a quote mad scientist, where I have these moments in my day where I just have this pure elation. I'm super excited about something. I'm even just the small shit. Oh, we're doing brunch, or oh, I got this, or oh, I got a submission in jujitsu. Just extreme happiness or positive affect. And then something small will happen and will trigger a negative reaction that just sends me in a tailspin. So I'm trying to just get a better hold of my emotional variance.
You want to just stay even kind of all the time?
I don't want to say even, but I want to stay more even, if that
okay.
makes sense.
Yeah.
And even if that means that I have to lose some of the, you know, if I have to take my happiness from a 10 to an 8, I'd be willing to do that so that I could take my negative emotions from a 10 to a 5. Like, that's fine with me.
All right.
So I just want to be a bit more balanced, and I feel like I can't just muscle my way through this. I can't just do another workout. I can't just fast more. I need tools that I don't have clearly from a professional that can kind of give me some tools that I can use in my own life. And, you know, the goal isn't to be in therapy forever. It's to, I want to get some tools so that I can be able to break the cycle quicker and faster and just return back to baseline. That's my goal.
So you are, so you're trying to get into this therapy?
Yeah, I've been reaching out to a few different practices.
What do you, I would imagine that you're pretty specific and that you definitely read the reviews. What are you looking for, and what's turned you off about a therapist?
Well, a few of them that I've reached out to are just kind of like shitty. Like, they're like, we don't really have much time, but maybe if you... I'm just
like, we'll book you
fuck?
In 6 months kind of thing?
Well, not even in 6 months, but like, maybe we could possibly get you in on a Wednesday if that's good for you, but I don't know yet. I'm like, what? Okay,
that
no
stuff,
thanks.
That stuff, I'm telling you, and I'm glad I asked, because I'm the same way. When I was looking for, like, little things would fucking turn me off about... Because I'm like, I felt like I was really, like, putting my whole fucking life into their hands with all of the shit that, you know, all the care that they were going to have to give me, and then they were like, fucking treat you like that on the phone, like you're bothering. Them.
Right. And this wasn't even on the phone. This was just like an email. I'm like, damn, you're giving me spiciness on the email. I'm trying to give you business, motherfucker. And listen, I'm a cheap Jew. You get that.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend money on something I don't have to, but I feel like why would I not invest into, you know, my mental health or just my mental well-being? I feel like I always think I can just read a book or listen to a podcast and then just get some good tips. And it's like, okay, maybe this isn't working, because I've tried that and it's like, it doesn't really get me where I need to go. So I got to try something else. As they say, if you just keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result, that's like the definition of insanity. So I'm trying to just do something else, try something else. And I will also give myself points for trying. You know,
are you looking for somebody to recommend?
No, I'm doing my own research. I don't want to like share a therapist with someone at the Bubba Army. No offense, guys, but I'd like to just keep that part of my life as private as possible. And if I want to share some stuff I learned, fine, but I don't want to tell people like where I'm going or who I'm talking to.
No, of course not. Of course not.
So, I found someone I like. I'm just waiting for a response back.
Okay. I was going to say, like, yeah. What's holding you off from finding that right somebody?
Them. I've reached out to them. I'm just waiting to hear back.
Would you do a telehealth deal, or you want
no,
it to be in person?
No,
you
fuck
would?
No. Okay. I hate that shit. So that the Zoom call can drop and I'm like, hello. I'm crying, telling them about some fucking horrible thing from my past, and the connection breaks. No, fuck that. I'm going in. I want it one-on-one. You know, I don't want to see their cat's asshole across the screen as I'm trying to talk to them. You know what I mean? I can see them playing on their phone. Like, that shit throws me off.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, I get that.
I need, like, your full undivided attention, and I can only really get that in person, yeah. So.
I only had one therapist that was telehealth, and.
It's awful, I can only imagine.
Well, I had a falling out with her, because I just didn't, it was like I was talking to my mom after a while. She just was, I told you, she didn't like the way that I told her about canceling an appointment. There was something where she didn't like the way that I told her, and it ended up giving me anxiety, and then I just stopped seeing her. But I've seen so many therapists, that's why it's a little bit hazy of, you know, what the falling out was.
Does it help you?
What helped me?
Therapy?
I don't think so.
But you still do it?
No, I don't do it anymore.
No.
I think that was my last one. I've seen probably five therapists. Oh, actually, that was not my last one. I just saw one less than a year ago that did rapid eye movement. Was that kind of therapy where, you know, she would do some shit with her hands and our stuff, and, you know, I would try.
Oh, the lateral movements?
Yes.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I did that. I had the very first kind of the very kind of first therapy that I had was it was tapping. So you tap on your meridians, which, like, you know, I'm sure you know about those, right?
No,
I don't. They're meridian points on your body. It's
The like Copernicus man, you know, stretched out, and they're like, these are the different meridians.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, like your neck bone and those, and then you're supposed to tap this shit, and then it's supposed to relieve your anxiety. So she's like, this lady's fucking tapping,
Sounds like some woo-woo snake oil salesman shit to
me. I mean, look, I didn't know. That was my first therapist, and I was like, let's give this a shot. You know, maybe you just don't, I wasn't on medicine at the time, so I was like, let's do this. And I go, this is too much fucking work, man. If I have an anxiety attack like I did today, what am I going to fucking just start tapping? Like, no, yeah. Like, I need some fucking medicine, or I need to go outside or something like that. So, I just feel like I've seen enough. I saw a psychiatrist, which are the ones that I give you the medicine.
The drugs, yeah.
And though Those guys don't listen to your fucking problems. Like, they just want to know how the medication's treating you.
Yeah.
So that's just something that just gives you medicine. I wanted somebody that I could talk to about my issues and could give me medicine. But apparently they're just completely different.
Yes,
so
yeah, not the same thing.
I wanted all of it in one person, but you cannot get that. So, but again, if I had to see somebody, I would see a therapist right now and not a psychiatrist.
Yeah, well, you already got your, you know, you got your meds dialed in already.
I got my meds dialed in from my fucking primary doctor, Anna. Like,
ooh.
I was seeing all these psychiatrists, these therapists, all this stuff, and then finally my doctor, because the doctor treats my fucking family, so she knows my mom, like,
sure.
She knows what I have, so she put me on the same thing, so, you know.
And it's working.
And now, hey, here I am.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think the people are curious to know. You did have an episode during the show, a behavioral episode. But are you okay?
Yeah. I don't know what, I know this sounds stupid, but it's just what happened. Like, it was like a cramp, almost like a cramp slash like shooting pain.
Okay.
That happened from my, are you laughing already?
No.
That was like in my shoulder, and I had it, and I was like, oh man, it hurts. And usually, like, it would go away in a couple seconds. Like, I've done it before.
Okay, you've had that experience.
Yeah, just like if I go put my arm behind, like, the car seat. Like,
I see. You get stuck, and it's, like, cramps up.
Yeah, so it just cramps up for a second. You know what? But so this cramped up, and then it didn't stop, and then it went through my whole body. So all of a sudden, my whole body feels that pain. I got very hot and started sweating, and then I got very fucking nauseous, which is obviously my least favorite thing. So I was sitting here sweating, thinking I was going to throw up during Bubba's thing, waiting for the pain to go away. And then finally, like, when Bubba was done and I went outside, as soon as, like, I knew as soon as I hit the air out there that I was going to start feeling better.
Yeah, and you did. You were back in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know what happened. I don't know what, you know, what sort of weird pain, you know, thing triggered it. But that was the most uncomfortable that I've been in a long time. So,
well, I'm glad it was brief.
Yeah, it was brief. If anybody goes back and watches the show from today, I don't know when the fuck it was, but there's definitely a period
it was
where
in the third hour.
I think there's a few people. I was watching chat because Bubba called Ronnie the limo driver and left him like a 3 minute voicemail, and then was listening back to the voicemail.
Yeah, he always does that.
And this is when I was stroking out. So
yeah.
When he started to listen to the voicemail, because I was like, no, this is a long voicemail. Don't listen to it again. And then as soon as he hit to listen it again, that's when I really thought that I was gonna fucking lose it and throw up. But
yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt the Ronnie thing. So
the flow.
So people are like, I remember Jay Bowler's like, I think something's wrong. And then somebody in chat's like, what's wrong? What are you talking about? What's wrong with what? And it's just like nobody knew what the fuck anybody was talking about.
Yeah.
And like four people saw that I was, you know, dying. So
yeah.
I appreciate the people that were paying attention.
Well, I'm glad that it was brief. I know you're going through a lot of shit right now.
Yeah, let me ask you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What did you think it was anything? When you saw, did you see that I was uncomfortable when it was happening at all?
No. I was like tuned into the call, and then I know Bubba likes to play it back.
Did you see me at all before I ran out? Or
no,
not really? Okay.
Not really. I tried to, and everyone, you were like, look, I'm sweating, but again, my vision isn't great. I have like a pretty severe astigmatism. You'd think I'd get that fixed too, but whatever, here we are. And the lighting isn't great. So I was trying to look at you, like, look at me sweating. I couldn't see shit because the lighting. And then you got up to show Bubba, and I could see Bubba react and was like, oh, damn. So I just took your word for it. And I saw you just kind of, and then what was kind of bizarre is you were trying to leave. I'm like, let him leave. And Bubba kept like,
he did. Yeah, he
wait,
did.
Wait, hold on. Interrupting you. And you're like standing at the door with the door open, wedged open with your water bottle, like trying to fucking just run outside. And Bubba just keeps like keeping you around to engage in conversation more.
Yeah, well, he goes, is this your new fancy way of quitting? And I'm like, Bubba, I was like,
let me out.
I was like, I'm fucking dying, man. I was like, I'm not quitting. Just let me get some air. So again, I don't know what happened, but you know, if I start feeling like that more often, then I'll definitely be visiting a hospital. But I think that it was just, Anna, how things are triggered. You know,
I have maybe an idea. I just want to read you the headline of an article that I included in prep. I think it was 2 days ago, but I thought I started reading it a bit more in depth after your episode.
Oh boy.
Daily weed smokers, 25% more likely to have heart attack, 42% higher stroke risk.
Yes. I get that.
This is from the Journal of American Heart Association. So, you know,
these
ain't no scrubs is what I'm saying.
Are you
concerned that perhaps the medication is actually less of a solution and more of a problem? Question mark.
I feel like you're, yeah. I don't know. It might be, but, you know, I really didn't have I really didn't have any much weed today at all.
Okay.
When I used to smoke weed, like it would hurt, like it would hurt my chest. So, I mean, I stopped smoking and I vape, which, you know, a lot of people says is the same. It's different to me. Like smoke is a lot more intense than vape.
But you're still
is.
Ingesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Air.
Yeah. I feel like I
smoke vape, whatever.
Yeah. I feel like it helps me because, you know, it helps me stay calm. It helps me, you know, feel okay. So instead of like getting, you know, all worked up about shit at certain times and, you know, I go to the doctor all the time. So, you know, I'm on cholesterol medication. Like my blood pressure is good. So
you're on statins.
I'm on the statins. Yeah. Low dose though. Very, very low dose.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was like on 10 or 20. I think it goes up to 80, but okay. they only put me on it because of a family history.
Yes. I am very much aware. I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Heart disease in your family.
Yeah. 26. My brother. Yeah. I sent,
fucking wild.
I sent Stein a direct message yesterday and cause I was watching his, Big Booty Latina.
Did you see that? Yeah, I did.
It's so fun.
I'm excited for the one to drop today too. I heard it's even more aggressive.
I know. I'm such a Stein fanboy, but I love how when everything starts devolving, he's like, you don't know what the First Amendment is. He's like, I can call you an idiot. I can call you a big booty Latina. I can say you're a moron and there's nothing you can do about it. But yeah, that was, so I was watching that and I just sent him a message. I was like, hey man, I'm glad you're okay. I was like, you know, I got hard shit in my family and he's, you know, he wrote me back right away. So I felt like I was very cool, but no, I felt horrible for him for, you know, having to go through that hard shit, you know, not knowing what it is. But a lot of the times the doctors will tell you, man, a lot of the times it's a panic attack. A lot of the times it's like gas, you know, a lot of times it's a grabber.
Oh, shit. I don't know because they all kind of have a similar feel to them.
A lot of people like, hey, you know, I've had friends that have gone for, you know, anxiety attacks, but they didn't know. They're like, I felt like an elephant was on my chest. And then you go and they run every fucking test on you and they tell you that nothing's wrong. And then they, you know, give you a prescription for Xanax. So.
Right. And then that helps. And you're doing better than you were before. And I think that's apparent. Even watching that video from... It was almost 4 years to the day ago.
Oh, was it? I didn't see the date.
Yeah, it was March 23rd, and it's now Pi Day. It's actually, you know me and dates. It's Dan's daughter's 16th birthday.
What? You
Happy
are
birthday,
fucking,
Sophia.
You're the Rain Man.
I know. It freaks people out, but I can't help it. It just once it's in the memory, once someone tells me when their birthday is, it's just, it's lodged
in
there
forever.
You just
went fucking Pi Day to Dan Diaco, Sophia. I mean, you are.
Yeah, well, it's Pi Day, 3.14. I mean, everyone knows that. No, yes.
But it's when I saw today was the 3/14, I didn't think of Pi Day at all.
Oh yeah, I think about it all the time.
I get that.
Yeah.
I feel like you were gonna say something important. Oh, you asked me you said watching the video.
It looks like you have progressed. And I know that at that point, March 2020, you hadn't been here all that long.
Oh, I was like, yeah, only 2 months at that point.
Yeah, something like that. And I don't know if you'd probably been in a situation where you were surrounded by people that maybe didn't ideologically align with you and you just felt like they were kind of shoving down everyone's throat all the time and you're like, dude, what the fuck? We can't have a differing opinion. Do you feel like you may have overreacted?
I mean, in that situation, yeah, but I would say that there was definitely a buildup. There was a buildup.
I could tell.
There was a buildup, I think, of probably getting shot down, you know, for things that I'm saying, and it was just, the show was kind of an echo chamber, and
yeah.
I didn't know what my role was. If I wasn't going to be able to say anything, I didn't really know what I was able to bring to the table. I obviously, like I say all the time, I don't care about, you know, anything politically, but I took COVID seriously at that time. And, you know, kind of the way the show was approaching it was like, hey, you know, it's the boogeyman. It doesn't really exist. And it's not as bad as that. And, you know, that's fine. Everybody still has their own opinion over COVID. I just thought it was a little bit more serious. You know, I was worried about the fucking people that in New York that were stacking bodies on top of each other. Then to come find out, you know, it was all the fucking government's fault for, you know, I don't know, locking up a bunch of senior citizens that had it. So, yeah, so I was, you know, I took it seriously. So, yeah, so, but I didn't quit that day. Like, whatever happened, things got worked out because eventually, when did you start the show? You started after that, right? So,
I started on June 17th, 2020.
Okay. So things still were okay enough to where I went to Bubba and was like, hey, you should hire this girl. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know what it was, Anna. Maybe I was, you know, upset with the way things were going in life. You know, I'm pretty open by saying I didn't really want to be here the first time.
Yeah, I think you made that apparent. Yeah. Like you said, it's not like you told me privately, but I kind of understand where you're coming from, at least COVID in the beginning, because I was pretty much singing the same tune as you, where I was accusing people of not saying the word grandma killer, but I was like, really, dude? I remember seeing Spring Breakers and they're like, everyone needs to stay home. and these spring breakers are out like partying.
On the beach, yeah. We're like, yeah. What? Get the fuck inside. What
I'm
are you
like,
doing?
What are you doing? What the fuck? And to be fair, with the limited knowledge that we had at the time, because it was such a new virus and nobody knew what was going on, obviously, at least in my opinion, it's better to play it safe, right?
Yes, yes.
Like, let's not take chances if we can all just stay home for 2 weeks to stop the spread. Obviously, you know, my tune changed later, but initially, I was pretty much saying the same thing as you. Like, we just don't know. I'm not a doctor, but even the doctors didn't know because it was a new... I know there's been coronaviruses, different types of coronaviruses, but this one seemed to be behaving differently, you know, and with different news coming out every day between, oh, it lives on cardboard for 3 days. No, just kidding, 3 weeks, and you need to wash
your Amazon,
this. And,
Amazon packages.
Right, exactly. And they're like, oh, on tile, it lives 6 days. Oh, no, 2 hours. It was just, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. It's like, we didn't know what the fuck was going on, so my best judgment was to just play it safe. Like, hey, let's just fucking stay home. Let's just try to separate. And people that were aggressively going out, they weren't the people that were like Dr. Dan educated. They were fucking stupid spring breakers who just didn't give a fuck. You
right.
know what I mean? And so I didn't really think to make them, you know, not, what am I trying to say? Like, not free speech heroes, but like,
yes,
you know, open the market, keep the economy going, heroes, martyrs for everybody else. They just wanted a party, and we were a damper on their good time. So I was like, fuck you, you young, stupid pieces of shit. But then with more information, that completely changed for me. And I remember the day that it changed, and that was shortly after the George Floyd incident.
Oh,
when we had the doctors and the nurses who were telling everybody who was trying to go to work, they were calling them grandma killers. And then there were the riots in the streets or the protests, whatever. And I remember seeing a clip of these nurses outside of some hospital in New York City, and they were applauding thousands of people, like parading, going through the streets, calling for, you know, equality, racial equality, whatever, shit like that. And I'm like, hold on a second. I'm like, this virus isn't woke. It's not going to not affect these people in the streets. Oh, this is all a scam. This is all bullshit. And then that's when I did a 180 and I'm like, fuck this whole thing. I'm going out. Fuck you. It's a lie.
So it was because the doctors and nurses were joined the gathering?
When Fauci refused to condemn the protesters who were protesting by the thousands. And like, yeah, they were wearing a mask, but they were pulling it down to scream whatever chant they were screaming.
Yeah, yeah.
They were in close proximity. You know, the mask they were using, it was below their nose, below their mouth. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And he refused to denounce them. He didn't say like, yeah, you guys need to stay home. Like,
is that his job though?
Yes.
That was his job.
Yes. He was the one that was giving the guidelines to the American people of wear a mask. Don't wear a mask.
Yeah, that's true.
Stay 6 feet apart. Like, stay home.
Strike my stupid question from the record. That's exactly his job.
Okay. So then he was like, I remember Congress was questioning him and he's like, will you not condemn the riots or the protests, but he's like, would you encourage people to stay home? And he goes, well, these people are fighting for racial equality, and you know that's a really big problem in this country, so I can't condemn them or tell them to stay home. I was like, what? What the fuck? You don't care about nothing. So then I realized it was all fake news, and that's when I went full Alex Jones. And I was like, this is a scam. This is not a hoax, but it was like, to me, COVID happened. COVID was real. I do believe it was cooked up in a lab. And I do think that the government saw this, whether it be the American government, the globalists, whatever you want to call it, they saw this as a good opportunity to seize control and power. And they went for it. So, like,
did they get anything out of it? I mean, like, did they get temporary power by keeping us inside? Like, what did they get? What they set out to gain? Or was it population control? What is the...
I think they were trying to... At least, and again, I know I'm accused of being a conspiracy theorist, but I mean, I understand basic human dynamics and fight for power and stuff like that. That's not just in American culture, but it's part of just universal human tendencies. I think it was a test. I think it was like, let's see how much we can tell people to do something. And if we can scare them enough, they will submit. They will just do what we say. They'll get in line. They'll become sheep, like all the whatever idioms that people use. And it was a test run to see, okay, if we scare people with something that they've never seen before. That was another thing with COVID, is there was really no reference point, because I mean, H1N1, that was kind of a joke. Ebola was kind of, not a joke, but, you know.
Nothing we had to worry about
right, so much. Right, right. It was like, oh, there's been a nurse that went down, but she's fine now. It's like two people in Texas or whatever.
I was trust me, I was freaked out about Ebola, but I did talk to my friend who's a nurse who said, you know, I think we're okay for now.
Yeah, unless you're like next to a dead, rotting body, you'll be all right.
Yes.
But with COVID, it was new. No one really had a reference point for it. The only person that people that did were infants during the Spanish flu of 1918. So please. So no one really knew what to do. And because it was scary and it was new, I think that the government saw this as an opportunity to see how much they could push people in a direction so that they would garner more control. I mean, the same thing happened after 9/11 with, you know, the Patriot Act.
Was that something that only the United States wanted to do, or was that something the whole world wanted to do?
I think it was a globalist effort to just see how much we can push people, the peasants, into getting in line. And
who brings this idea up at the meeting? Like when the countries are sitting together, the secret nation, like the leaders of whatever, whoever makes these decisions, to go, we want to test the people out. Like, who is it? China that brings it up? Is it the United States? Like, are they working together? They just make it seem like they're not that close. From, you know, how does this happen when you want to do a global pandemic?
I think it's even beyond like the government. I think, to be honest with you, it could be. A lot of them are people. At least, again, I don't know this to be a fact, so I'm pretty straightforward about that. But names like George Soros, which is a famous one, but yes, they have these certain ideas about how they want things to go, and they're maybe not in the limelight where they're like, I'm spearheading Black Lives Matter, but they can funnel money into these groups, and they can funnel money into caravans of people coming from Venezuela to the United States, and they can funnel money into, you know, the NIH or the CDC or whatever, like, you know, obviously, so they're not going to say no to money.
So there's people like Soros in every country, then every nation, that could, you know, pull something like this off.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying it was just George Soros's fault, but you got to think, like, with any government, the reason why the United States is pretty unique is that you have these three different branches of government that are supposed to not, you know, kind of interfere. That it's this balance of power, so you don't have just one branch taking over.
Judicial, executive, and legislative.
Nailed it!
Oh, baby!
So that was kind of a unique configuration of American politics at the genesis of the United States of America, where they didn't want to consolidate power in any one person or any one party or any one entity, agency. It was kind of spread out so that they kept each other in check. Most countries, or at least no countries up until that point, had anything like that. It was just, you had a king, you had a monarch, you had an emperor, you had a whatever, just one leader, I suppose. So I think that there's always a fight to try to push the boundaries. You know, if you are president, you can enact an executive order that gives you more power to do more things, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. All right. I wanted to kind of see how how, you know, the whole world got together.
And to be honest with you, I think that the origin of that, of this whole, and I know Alex Jones talks a lot about the globalists, it's that you have few people in power who think that they have a certain idea about how things should be run. You know, whether it's we should have borderless countries, right?
You mean the people in power that we know of, or the people in power that we don't know of?
Mostly the ones we don't know of.
Okay.
They're more insidious because they have all the power and money, but none of the fame. So they're able to kind of just hide behind the curtains of whatever's going on. And they may have some ideas, some ideological ideas about how they think things should be run. And maybe they think that, you know, everybody needs to be vaccinated for whatever reason, or they think that, you know, we need to tap into people's phones for the reasons of national security.
Yeah, if TikTok's not getting enough info from us, then, you know, they
right,
tap in,
right, right. And so the more information people have, the more they're able to kind of control the masses. And I think that, you know, the governing bodies always want more power. If you have the option to have more or less power, you're probably going to opt for more, I suppose.
I can't even wrap my mind around it, Anna, like a secret society. I'm not saying it doesn't exist at all, but it's just, it's tough to wrap my mind around. It makes me wish that I was, you know, on Earth, you know, hundreds of years ago, to where I could join this, you know, and then have my family be a part of it, or however you stay in the club.
Right.
Because I want to feel like, you know, I'm the elitist of elite. But, you know, apparently there's too many secret societies where it's already happening.
Well, I think that they're, and I'm going to say men, because I think men are more driven by money and power than women are typically, not always. But there are some people where, you know, they have the billions of dollars. So what is driving these people? I think it's just a certain personality trait where they have this insatiable thirst for just more whatever, more money, more power, more everything. Like, and people ask this a lot about Donald Trump. Like, what drives this man? Like, fuck, he has billions of dollars, or, you know, allegedly has billions, depending on who you talk to. Some people say he's fucking broke. I don't know. But whatever, he's a rich businessman who, like, spearheaded the, 1970s, 1980s Manhattan real estate scene. This mogul who has all the money, a beautiful wife, young wife that he cheats on all the time.
Yes.
He has all the power. He was president already once. Like, what the fuck is the point? You know,
he loves America.
Why? No, that's so, I mean, that's, to me, that's obviously not, because I feel like, I think if it, what's best for America is us to just get some fresh blood, probably, you know.
I'm ready to import somebody from another country at this point. I mean, just give us, I mean, just somebody that crosses the border has got to be
better qualified. Got to
have some good ideas, yeah.
Yeah, so I think what drives people when they have all the money they could want and even all the power is like, is what's left is just legacy. It's like, okay, I want to be Alexander the Great. I want to be remembered as someone who's in the history books. And I won't even get to enjoy that glory because I'll be fucking long dead. But it's just like you're leaving this, your lasting imprint on this globe as someone that will be in the history books, that everyone will remember. You will be a more valued human being in terms of, like, you think about all the people that have existed on the earth. I mean, the level of celebrity, power, prestige, money that Donald Trump has is insane, because most people don't even get anywhere close to that level of, on any of those metrics, whether it be power, money, fame, or he's got all of them.
Yes.
You know, so when you have all the power and you have all the money, what's left to, in my mind, the only thing that is left is legacy. And that's what he's trying to accomplish, is like, I fucking did it. I won when no one said I would win. I fucking lost, even though it was stolen from me, according to him. And then I fucking came back and took it back for myself. Like, who fucking has done that? No one.
I mean,
so I kind of get it. Like, he's like, I want to fucking do it.
That's the great American comeback story.
I love it.
Yeah,
so,
you're president, then you're fucking not, then you're, they're arresting you for
back.
Shit, then you come back as president.
Think about that. Like, they're trying to nail him on every little fucking dotted I, cross T, everything that he did wrong, which, in my mind, a lot of these charges are just fucking bogus. Like, obviously, they're trying to just knock him out of the race. Any normal person would be like, fine, just leave me alone. I don't want to deal with this. He's not doing that.
Oh, no, he's not.
He's leaning into it more, and it's actually helping his campaign, because it's becoming blatantly obvious to all of his supporters or anybody who is not a huge Biden fan that that's clearly what they're doing. And fuck that. We got to stick it to the man for trying to get this man out of the running on some, you know, not legit charges.
Do you think that if Trump is the president, do you think that he'll rejoin Twitter, or is he going to put everything up on Truth Social? Because I don't want to have to join another social media site.
Yeah, I sure don't.
But I think everybody's still going to need to see the tweets. I mean,
I think he'll come back on Twitter, he's on X.
Yeah, I think Elon will talk him into it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, him and Elon are buds.
Elon said he's not donating any money.
Doesn't matter.
Do you believe that?
Perhaps. But he's still being seen with him.
He's not being
seen with Joe Biden, but he's hanging out with Donald Trump. So
okay, there you go. I think.
Should we end it there?
Yeah, it's locked in. I've been wondering that for a while, because I just, the tweets were what, you know, the people needed to see every single day. Rocket Man, love that.
Yeah, one of the classics. Little Marco, that was one of my favorites, because he's got little hands.
Was that Twitter? Did he say that during a debate?
He said that during a debate.
Okay.
But just like his insults, Crooked Hillary, Dumbass Joe, or whatever the fuck you call it, Sleepy Joe.
Yeah, we got to get him back on Twitter immediately.
Thank you, Seth.
God bless.